Welcome to Writers in the Sky podcast, an educational show about the craft and business of writing. We offer interviews and tips about book publishing and marketing. Writers in the Sky is produced by Writers in the Sky Creative Writing Services based in Nashville, Tennessee. Our team offers ghostwriting and editing for fiction and nonfiction books, articles, bios, resume, and marketing pieces. Hi, I'm Yvonne Perry, the owner of Writers in the Sky Creative Writing Services. My podcast guest today is Storyheart, or better known as Barry Eva. Born in Barnet, Hertfordshire, England, Barry left his beloved England in 2000, moving to the U.S. to be with the woman he had fallen in love with and met on the Internet. Now Barry, his wife, and their two children live in Seymour, Connecticut. Under the name Storyheart, Barry is better known for his short romance stories on the net and his book Stories from the Heart. This is his first attempt at a children's novel. Popular for narrating his stories on local TV as a guest on other media stations, Barry's wit, oratory, and old-fashioned English charm make him a popular interviewee. Storyheart is here today to talk about his book, Across the Pond. Welcome to Writers in the Sky, Barry.
Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for having me as a guest.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to share your book and some information about publishing and marketing.
That's fine.
So let's begin with an overview of your book. Tell me a little bit about the storyline of Across the Pond.
Okay, well, they say write about what you know. And as you said, I moved across to the U.S. in 2000. So obviously I know about some of the issues and problems one has moving across the pond, so to speak. In my book, there's a 15-year-old, well, almost 15-year-old, Fred Squire, whose parents, they win a trip to Australia for two, and that doesn't include him. So he has a choice of either going to his grandparents in Scotland or to stay with friends in America. And after a slightly heated discussion and a bit of bribery in the shape of a new Xbox, he decides to go across to America. And he stays with friends of his family, and these friends have got a daughter called Brittany, who's about his own age. And pretty soon, the two of them become what Brit's father calls an item. But along the way, he has a confrontation with the local bully called Steve Harriet, who's been terrorizing the girls, and that's going to build up to a final confrontation, which it does. There's a mad barbecue, there's a chase through the mall, and there's even a bit of trouble when Fred goes to a baseball game and catches this 500th home run ball, which obviously is worth a small fortune these days, and of course everybody wants to get the ball from him as well. Mm-hmm. And all the way through, he's got trouble with the language and trouble with just understanding what goes on in America. The first time he gets to a stoplight and they turn right on red, he nearly has a conniption, because obviously that's something that nobody ever does in England, is go through a red stop sign sort of thing. But it's a book originally sort of aimed at teens and young adults, but it's actually being read and enjoyed by people from 10 to 80, so it's a book for everybody.
Okay, not just for teenagers then.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I've had so many. I've been very lucky. I've got the book came out in October, and I think I'm now up to 62 reviews on Amazon.
Wow.
And I've been so lucky. A lot of people, it's been like, I bought this book for my child, and they don't normally read, and they sat down and read it. And I think one lady said, I picked it up after he'd read it, and I started reading it, and lunch was forgotten, the housework was forgotten until I finished the book. And this is what seems to be happening. People, instead of it just being for it's not just for the young, it's for the young at heart as well.
There
I think that's
go.
The best way of putting it.
Exactly. And I do love the young adult genre. I read them myself.
Well, that's right. But, I mean, the thing is, it's a story that everybody can relate to. There's humor. There's language issues. There's a romance issue. There's even a moral in it. I've had two or three people saying it's like I'm the new Judy Blume, even,
There you go.
Can't say better than that.
Okay. So your transplant to the United States from England, I'm sure that you incorporated some of your own experiences into Fred's story, like the turning right on red.
Yeah, there's a lot of me in the book.
When I write,
I tend to become the character, so there's a lot of me and personal firsthand things that have happened to me, you know, that happens to Fred. And even now, I mean, 8-9 years later, I still have at work, I go into a meeting and I say something which is quite normal in England. You know, I was in a meeting the other day and they said, did somebody say something? And I said, no, they didn't say a dicky bird, which is a standard English saying, meaning they didn't say anything. And everybody just sits there looking at you, wondering what on earth you're talking about. You know?
Was that vulgar?
So it happens all the time. And poor Fred, he gets himself into a lot of trouble along the way. But it all ends sort of happy, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, just out of curiosity, for my sake, is it difficult to learn to drive on the other, I won't say right or wrong, the other side of the road?
Okay, you've got to remember that most people have been to Europe, driven in France and stuff like that from England, and you drive on the right-hand side of the road there.
Okay.
The reason we drive on the left-hand side of the road is because in the days of, you know, being on horseback, most people being right-handed, you pass somebody on the left-hand side so that if you're attacked, your sword arm was free to defend yourself.
Oh, okay.
And so that's where it comes from, driving on the left-hand side.
Okay. All right.
Now, the French changed it to the right-hand side because the aristocracy used to take the left-hand side, so the peasants used to be pushed over to the right-hand side. And then after the French Revolution, they decided the right-hand side was the best.
Oh, okay. Well, they're switch hitters.
Exactly. I mean, if you're ambidextrous, I guess you just drive down the middle, you know.
Go down the middle. Doesn't matter. Stay between the ditches.
Yeah.
Well, how did you come up with developing a story? I mean, you sound quite young. I'm going to assume that you are.
And no, I'm not. I'm old.
And probably not too far removed from the teenager setting.
I'm 57.
How are you really?
I do have a child of 6 and a child of 7, which I've, you know, since I've been to America. So, you know, there's still life in the old dog yet sort of thing.
There you go.
Nieces who were around about the same age as Fred and Brittany, and I did use them as sounding boards when I wrote the story.
Okay, so that's how you kind of developed the main characters then.
Yeah, I mean, I had an idea. I mean, I've written small stuff for children in the past, some like little school plays and stuff like that, and I had an idea that I wanted to write something a bit longer in my short stories, because up until then I'd done a lot of short romance stories. They're sort of like 5-10 minute reads. In fact, some people call them bathroom stories because that's mm-hmm. the only time you might get 5 or 10 minutes piece of quiet to read.
Myself, exactly.
So, I decided I wanted to write something for children, and I started off aiming sort of 11, 12, but then as the romance came in and my sort of romance hat, if you like, I started to be put on, the ages went up to 14, 15. So, you know, it changed as I wrote it.
Okay. So you've been writing really then for all ages of children and young adults?
Yes. I mean, when I was younger, I sort of wrote, obviously, like everybody does, the poems and stuff like that. But then I did some songs, and then I wrote a couple of little plays for young children, and then I went on to the romance stuff and did that for quite a few years, and now I'm sort of back to, I wanted to do something for young adults. Well, it ended up young adults, though. So I don't like being put in the pigeonhole, you know, you're a young adult novelist or you're a this novelist. If people enjoy it, what the heck does it matter what age they are?
Oh, absolutely. I still enjoy watching Disney and Pixar children's movies.
Yeah, with my two kids, that's all we've got in the house. You're joking.
Exactly. I mean, genre really does not have an age attached to it. I still love children's books. I have 10 grandchildren. We'll have 10 grandchildren by the end of this year.
Oh,
so I am really into children's books. And now that my oldest grandchild is actually becoming a teenager this year, I'm sure that this is a book I would recommend to her. So I hope
you will, because mm-hmm. you know, this is the thing. I think the youngest review I've had is from a 10-year-old, and the oldest is from somebody who was 80.
Wow! So yeah, I'd say cross genre market there.
As long as people enjoy it, what does it matter? Mm-hmm. That's my view on it.
Right, it's a good story that anyone can enjoy. So genre, it's not
a short, quick read. that takes people out of their life to another world, and everybody will find, people find different things in it. You know, it's interesting reading the reviews that some people pick up something and some people pick up something else. And I've even had people say there's a moral in it, you know, that girls should speak to their mothers more and all this. But it's, if people enjoy it, that's all that matters to me.
That's for sure. Well, let's go back a bit. What sparked your interest in writing in the first place?
We've always, my family has always been sort of creative in a way. Nobody's sort of really a writer, though. The rest of my family are basically teachers. I think I'm the only, I'm the black sheep that's not a teacher. But I used to go. My father used to tell us stories on a Sunday morning. You know, Sunday mornings we used to go into my parents' bedroom and I had a cup of tea and we sat there and my father used to tell us stories and stuff like that. And it developed from that. I never really call myself a writer these days. I'm not a literary genius or anything like that. I'm a storyteller. You know, that's what I class myself as. And I guess that comes from, you know, my childhood and stuff like that.
So as far as storytelling, then when you are writing a book, do you follow a schedule or do you just go do some research or an idea?
Okay, well, in this case, obviously, the research I'd lived. I started off, I joined the Society of Book Writers and Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, and I used to go to like the monthly meetings, and I made a decision that I wanted to try and write something. So I did the first chapter and I went along and discussed the first chapter, and then I did the first three chapters, I think, something like about 10 times, you know, taking them along until I'd got the rhythm going, until I got the, you know, the feel of the characters and stuff like that. And then it was a case, a lot of it I wrote during my lunchtime at work.
Oh,
because
wow.
With two young children, I don't get much peace and quiet at home. But, you know, I tried to sort of go through so much a month, and I set myself that, you know, I was going to finish it within a year, you know, which I did. But the hardest thing was, because I'd always, up till then, a lot of it been the short 5-10 minute stories, was basically teaching myself to write a novel, you know, to develop a character, to build a plot. You know, half of me wanted to finish the book, you know, just like that, you know, make it like a 5-10 minute read. Now, in a way, that was good because it leads to building a good hook at the end of each chapter, which a lot of people have said, you know, once they started reading it, they couldn't put it down because, you know, you get to, it's like the old cinema serial, you know, come next week, you know, there they are left hanging on from the cliff sort of thing. And that, if you like, in a way with the short stories, actually helped. But I had to learn how to develop a book and build the characters, and that took a little while.
So the longer work, it does take more involvement.
Oh, yeah.
What you're doing in one chapter, you've got to repeat over and over and over, plus look at the big picture of what's happening in the overall.
That's right. I mean, I had a rough idea. You know, I sketched out like a rough skeleton. But as it went on, things, as I said earlier, the age changed, for instance, you know, and things changed. And the ending, I really didn't know about until I got to the end almost. I didn't have a plan of exactly what was going to happen at the end, and you know, it got to the stage where, okay, I know I'm going to do this, I know I'm going to do that, but how am I going to finish?
I found that to be true so many times, and I've heard other writers and authors say the same thing, that a book typically tends to write itself. It tells you who the characters are, what their personalities are like, and as you begin to write, the muse comes through and gives voice and gives their character and personality. Did you find that to be?
Yes. I mean, and as I said, you know, I become the characters. There's so much of me, and I've got my own pod radio show as well, and I've interviewed a few authors and that, and a number of people who said, you know, while you're writing it, you are that person, and that helps make the characters more believable. I think
It's so more like the archetypes within us become vocal. And to give presence.
And as you say, the muse comes upon you, and you know, if you could transfer stuff from your mind direct onto paper without typing, you know,
that would be nice.
you'd be reeling it away because your mind's halfway ahead to the next 2-3 chapters as you're typing out the one you're working on, sort of.
Exactly. And that's where I get lost in the creative process, because being the editor, the other side of my brain kicks in and goes, oops, you misspelled that. Don't you want a comma there? I'm like, whoa, now what was I going to write? Oh, it was so good, too.
Well, that's the issue I have, because my spelling's atrocious. Thank goodness for spell check. That's all I say. But, you know, I want to type away, and I really need other people to go back and check what I've written. That's why it was so good going to the meetings and stuff like that. The people could pick up stuff that when you're writing, you're too close to the tree, you know, too close to the forest to see the trees sometimes.
Absolutely. You know? I say that all the time. It's so true. So you had a writing group that you bounced your ideas?
I went to a Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators meeting, and I read the chapter, and then they sit there, listen, and then they make a few comments. You can't speak. You just listen, and then they write stuff down on paper, which they send hand to you. And, you know, some of the things you think, oh, my goodness, do you know, that is so obvious. Why didn't I see that?
Oh, wow. There's nothing like getting another pair of eyes on your story.
Oh, you need, and you really need it, because...
You do. Absolutely.
Your mind's telling you something, but it's telling you it wrong, you know? And it keeps coming wrong.
Well, you see it a certain way. Like you said, you've become so close to it, you know what you meant to write. But does a first-time reader follow your train of thought? They're not in your head. They're not in your brain. How well have you put that thought across on paper? And getting that fresh pair of eyes and the fresh perspective, a first-time reader sees things that the author, who's been in this for months and months, are going to see things differently.
Yeah.
And they're going to point things out to you. And that's where you go back to the rethink tank, as I call it, and you just go back and rethink some sections and go, oh, okay, now if I were a first-time reader, how does this come across? Did I develop this character well enough that they're going to know who it is when I introduce it or speak of him later?
Yeah, I mean, that is so true, so true.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit and discuss the publishing and marketing experience that you have had in publishing across the pond.
Okay. Well, like everybody, I did the initial going around the publishers, going to seminars, meeting these people. I spent a whole year or so just trying to do this, trying to get the book out there. A lot of publishers won't talk to you unless you've got an agent. A lot of agents won't talk to you unless you've been, you've published. It's a vicious circle, a lot of it. And it got to such a state that I went to a first three chapters seminar where publishers and agents and that were there, and they were meant to have read the first three chapters of your project, and then they speak to you one-on-one and let you know what they think.
Wow.
Well, I sat there through the whole of, 2 hours while various people went off with the people that were meant to have read your book, and everybody else was being spoken to, and I was sitting there, and eventually towards the end, somebody said, well, has anybody been missed? And I stuck my hand up saying, yeah, nobody's sort of spoken to me. So I went, this lady who's meant to have read my book basically went out, and she basically pulled the book apart. And she, I don't think she'd read it from the things she said, and the fact that she'd forgotten me, sort of thing. And I, at the end of it, I thought, I don't need this, and I basically stopped writing for a year. I just, I didn't need that. I mean, it's all very well taking some knockbacks, but this is somebody who obviously hadn't read the book, and they basically pulled the whole thing apart and said, this is rubbish, and this is, and I really wish I could remember who it was, because I'd love to send her all the reviews.
People now love it. Those who have read it actually like it.
Exactly. So I, in the end, I stopped, basically stopped. I didn't even write my short romance stories except for my Christmas special I do. And then the start of this year, something happened, and I thought, well, you know what? I'm gonna do a print on demand on this, because so many people have sort of said they've enjoyed it from the various groups and writers groups and stuff like that. Let's see what happens. And I went to Ex Libris, and I should think within 2 months of being there, I mean, they called me every day, basically, to let me know what was going on. Within two to three months, the book was out.
Wow.
The first time I took it. Now, my next one, whether I'm going to do print on demand or whether I'm going to do publishing myself, I'm not sure, because, that's not as hard as it seems, I don't think, either, So I'll have to think about that one. But I was very happy. They did the editing. you know, the people who did design the cover. I had an idea of it, and within like 2-3 days, the artist had come back with an idea of the cover, and it just took a couple more days to sort of tweak it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really good, you know, and the service and everything that I had with the production of the book was very good.
Very good. Okay. Well, tell me a little bit about some ways you're promoting your book. Are there certain avenues that it could...
I've had so much fun with the promotion. I love doing radio shows. I think the accent helps, but I just like having a chat, you know. So I love doing radio shows. I did a virtual book tour with pumpupyourbookpromotion.com.
Yeah.
Wonderful
yeah,
group of ladies. And I enjoyed every moment. I think virtual book tours are the way to go, because without leaving
Absolutely.
Your desk, I was in Australia, I was in Korea, I was in Italy. You know, every day I was somewhere, and I loved it. Sometimes it's a bit weird because you get the same questions time after time, but some of them you get some really, you know, humorous type questions, and I love all that. The thing was, once I finished my month, it was just like the last night of a Broadway show. You know, you come up the next day and you think, where am I going to go now? What am I going to do? But you have to keep going. You know, you have to keep doing the blogs and speaking to people, getting out there, going to various. I got a couple of shows coming up. I got a TV appearance, I think, later on this week in one of the local public access TVs and stuff like that. So that's what a lot of people, they expect them, you know, you do your marketing stuff and that's it, and then leave it. You've got to keep going. You've got to keep pushing mm-hmm. it. You've got to keep, you know, making it out there, putting it out there.
So you have done your own marketing? You did not hire a publicist?
No, I've done my own marketing. The only thing I've used is the Pump Up Your Book promotion people,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, compared to a lot of the places and a lot of things, there was a few weeks ago in my Connecticut Authors magazine, there was an article about a well-known publisher, and they've started offering for new authors this wonderful service, according to them, and it was an introductory price of $999. And for that, they were going to set you up with a Facebook account, a web page, a blog, all of which are free and you can do yourself in about 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And they came out with this thing, and basically what they were offering for nearly $1,000 basically was stuff you can do yourself.
Uh-huh.
But there is so much out on the internet. There are so many people who will help you, so many ways you can do things without a lot of money. I mean, sure, you're going to need a supply of books to send out. And one thing I do love is the small blogs, the teen bloggers that are out there.
Uh-huh.
They're the people who read the books. They're the people
uh-huh.
who pass the information on for young adults. And I love visiting them as guests. Because you know they're going to be the ones that are going to say, hey, you should read this. This is a great book sort of thing, you know, to friends or to other bloggers. And there's so many of them there, you know.
That's true. That's true. And they are very tech savvy, and they have all the electronics necessary to help you promote.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you go to one and they might have 60 followers, and then somebody out of those 60 wants you to come along. And I interviewed one this last Saturday. She has 200 followers. But
wow.
You don't realize there's some blogs out there, some of the big ones, that have like 3 million followers a month, because it's more like a newspaper thing.
Mm-hmm.
These people that get a lot of hits. I mean, how many bookstores can you go to where you might get 30 or 40 people read about your book and actually come and are interested in it, not just come for a freebie bookmarker or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Virtual tours are the way to go, and the internet is the way to go. Bookstores these days, a lot of the big Barnes and Nobles and stuff, are just like warehouses. You know, they get the books in, they don't sell in 2 weeks, they send them back and get the credits. You know, the old bookstores just aren't there anymore. Well, there's a few, thank goodness. You know.
They don't do a whole lot to market them.
Exactly.
It either sells or it doesn't. It's up to the publisher or the author. And most days, especially with the print-on-demand, they don't offer the publicity services. So that's where we have kind of picked up the ball with Writers in the Sky. Yes, you can do all of those things that you talked about, setting up the accounts and doing the blogging, but some people don't have the time to do it, or they don't know what is available,
exactly.
or they don't have time to do the research. So we do have some packages out there that we will help people get started, and then they can take it over themselves, or they can have us continue to manage it for us. In fact, I wrote a book and published it last October, and it's all about online marketing and what is out there and how to access it and what it's for. A lot of times you just hear about Facebook and go, yeah, that's right. What is it for? But how do you use it? And so that's what my book is about. And
yeah, I mean, I've read some of the stuff, and the service you offer is really good. And again, it's not exorbitant in cost, you know.
Right. We just got to keep our time.
Exactly. And you know, it's companies like yours are, you know, what new authors should be looking for. Yeah, the initial help like that to get up and running, to somebody who knows about the stuff to take their the education that they've already learned and to pick it up. You know, you don't want to reinvent the wheel all the time.
Right, exactly. And putting it all in one place at one time where you can access it with a click of
the
mouse is very nice.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that you have 62 reviews on Amazon. How did you get people to write reviews? What did you do?
I wish I knew.
What just happened then?
I mean, there are a certain number of people who, from the blogs and stuff like that, that have read the book, and, you know, and there are places out there where you don't even have to send a book to. Like, some people just take the PDF file, you know, and say you don't even have to pay the cost of the book. And then, you know, if people say, well, if you've enjoyed the book, you know, please do us a review. But every day I go in and I look, and one appeared yesterday, and another one was there on Saturday, and I don't know, people are just...
Well,
I mean, some of them are wonderful as well. I mean, it reading some of the reviews, that to me is what makes it all worthwhile.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Getting that feedback and finding out what people think of it, I think is a...
I mean, if somebody tells you, you know, they really enjoyed it and can't wait for the next one to come out and stuff like that, if they've enjoyed it, that makes all the effort worthwhile to me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree. Well, Barry, is there anything else you wanted to share with our listeners today about your book or about writing or publishing, marketing?
I think I said enough about the marketing and that. No, the book is out there. I mean, it's called Stories from the Heart. And
where is it available? Where is it available? Tell us.
Okay, it's available at all the online, you know, all the internet sites. So it's obviously Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, right down to Target have got it as well. But all the online sites, you just look for the author's Story Heart, which is what I write under, and it's called Across the Pond, and it's out there for everybody to read and enjoy.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, I appreciate the interview. Thank you for being my guest and sharing your book and some tips on marketing and publishing. I think you've done a great job not only with the book but with publishing it and promoting it. And you shared some wonderful information with our listeners today. I encourage everyone to go out and get a copy of Across the Pond by Story Heart. So, Barry, I really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Writers in the Sky podcast. Be sure to join us each Friday as we post a new show to our blog. You may access our blog through our website at writersinthesky.com. Our podcast series is also found on iTunes. If you hear us through iTunes and enjoyed today's interview, please leave a comment so that will help others to find us as well. Get a copy of Across the Pond by Story Heart and enjoy reading. Post a review, and we'll talk to you next Friday. Bye-bye for now.